Hi, everybody. Hope you're having a great day so far. Before you start today's episode, I just want to give you a small reminder to hit that subscribe button wherever it is that you're listening to today's podcast. And also, if you have the time, if you could feel free to leave us a review, that would help us out tremendously. There are some weird podcast algorithms that are out there. Too scientific for me to comprehend or explain, but it would help us out tremendously if you did that. Thanks for listening to the Northern Nerd Podcast. Today's guest on the show is one of the more genuine people that I've ever talked to, and he's not only a passionate writer, but he's also very passionate about nature and the outdoors and getting kids outdoors. And his name is Jeff Dania, and I drove out to his house on Spider Lake to have a cup of coffee with him and some conversation to talk not only about his books, but also his love for the North Woods of Wisconsin and the outdoors. He's a great storyteller. What he has to say comes from the heart, and I think you're really going to enjoy our conversation today. I apologize if you hear a little bit of background noise, but we're in a genuine spot having a cup of coffee, some conversation, and the hum of the coffee machine and the refrigerator is in the background. But, that kind of gives it that authentic feel, like if you were to sit down and be right at the table with us, you'd hear all those sounds as well. So without further ado, here's my conversation with Jeff Dania. Welcome to another episode of the Northern Nerd Podcast. Today, I am joined by author Jeff Dania. We're out at his house here on Spider Lake, and it's just a gorgeous day, and we're having a cup of coffee and some conversation. I'm excited to talk with him about his books, especially his first book, Figure Eight, but all of his other books that go along with this series, and we got an exciting announcement that he's releasing a new book today called River Gold, so we got the Northern Nerd exclusive here for that. Jeff, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. I had a great time reading your book. My wife and I just got back from a trip to Denmark and Norway, and I needed a book to read on the flight because I'm not one that can, I don't know about you, but I can't really sleep on an airplane or in a car or anything. So I needed something to keep me entertained, and your book definitely did that. So thank you for giving me something to read.
It's my pleasure. I'm glad you enjoyed it. It is, Figure Eight is the beginning of a different kind of mystery. And the cover on Figure Eight is a USGS topo map of Spider Lake and the Eight. And it began when I wrote that book. First of all, I didn't know I was going to write a book.
Okay, yeah, I was just going to ask you, like, how did this come about?
You're sitting at Book Central. So here's what happened. I mean, this is a fairly long story, but I can.
It's okay. We got time.
Okay. Well, before I was born, my dad was up here grouse hunting with a friend of his, friend who has a place over on Namakagan River. They didn't want to travel back there, and so they stopped at a gas station and said, "Do you know any place we could stay?" And the guy said, "Yeah, the guy down the road is remodeling some old work cabins into tourist cabins, and he's got one done. He'll put you up and feed you breakfast." So my dad and his friend did that. They got up in the morning and they looked out, and there was Spider Lake,
which is quite a view.
And my dad asked the guy who owned the cabin. He said, I have one child and a wife. I wasn't born yet. And he said, can I come back here in the summertime? And the guy said, that's exactly what I want. I want families to come back. That started a tradition that's lasted 77 years in my family.
I love that.
And we are all here now over the period of years we've bought the cabins, and we're all here together from babies on up.
That's special.
It is a great place for us. And anyway, my dad started this tradition. And when he did start the tradition, other things came along. And one of the things we did was I would buy a case of mystery books from a local author, and I'd hand them out to everybody, and we'd read these books together.
Like your own little book club.
It was our own book club. Yeah. Well, you know, and we wouldn't sit in each other's lap and read them, but they'd say, yeah, what part are you on now?
Yeah.
And so she didn't write a book one year. And for whatever reason, I sat down and wrote Figure Eight. That year we got together and I handed it out, spiral bound copies of Figure Eight to my family. We submitted it. My wife submitted it to a publisher who turned us down completely. But the next person said, you know, we can work with this. And Figure Eight became the basis for all the rest of the books.
That is, yeah. What was the process of writing your first book like?
I wrote the story. I simply wrote the story. I've got it over my life. I've had an eclectic group of friends and different jobs. And I sat down by the wood stove with split ash, because there's a lot of ash around, with a Labrador at my feet, wind blowing, and I wrote the story. And I can't hardly believe I did it. And then I realized that Figure Eight was more about us as a community facing, and this law enforcement officer facing some real challenges. And so that's where Figure Eight came from. But my son is an artist. See, you want to hear something. So, okay. I wanted my kids to, you know, to help them get an education. And my son, Chris, announced to me when he was graduating high school that he had made a choice about what he wanted to do for a living. I said, well, great, what are you going to do? He said, I want to go to art school. Well, you know, that's what you tell your dad that, and you go, art school? Oh, that's great. And I envisioned him on the State Street in Madison with a guitar case doing caricatures of people and throwing $5 on the guitar case.
Yep.
He said, well, Dad, I also might as well tell you this. I want to go to the school of the Institute of Chicago, the most expensive art school.
Naturally, right?
Yeah. And I said, well, that's really good. He says, I think I'm going to get a scholarship. He did. And he is a very successful artist. And seeing so, you know, I have an investment, he was able to design the covers and continues. But he came up with this idea of the mystery starting at the cover. When you look at the front of the book, you're starting the mystery. At Figure Eight, you're following an eight.
Mm-hmm. Just like you do in musky fishing, right?
It's just like musky fishing.
Mm-hmm. It all comes back to that. Yeah.
That's a map's number five there in the corner.
Okay. Yeah, that's... I love the cover concept and how, I don't know, it's kind of become through, well, now you're releasing your fifth book, but it's kind of become like that calling sound, like, oh, that is definitely Jeff's book right there.
Yeah, and you know what else? They like them.
I do, yeah.
And
I see how people could like that for sure.
Okay, all right, I won't rattle on anymore.
No, that's the whole point of this. I am fine with however much you want to talk, man. That's I am glad that that you wrote your books and that we're able to, yeah, I can totally see how this coffee table that we're sitting at right now would be a great spot too for just writing spot. In the mornings and or whenever it is that you write. Like just I think the beauty of the Northwoods to me is having the ability to just pause and reflect,
yes,
and have time to disconnect from the world and just, I don't know, be able to have those creative thoughts. And I mean, anywhere can spark inspiration when you're able to just breathe and relax.
Well, you know, I did a class, I do a class at UW Eau Claire, a creative writing class.
Okay. That's where I graduated from. I'm not sure if you know that, but yeah. What professor did you work with?
Joel.
Okay.
Yeah. And anyway, I go there every year. And this year the kids asked me a question.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting. This is a long class, several hours long. And we really go through all sorts of things. But they said, what about artificial intelligence in writing? I said, well, first of all, with artificial intelligence, I could use some. But I said, artificial intelligence has no place in the outdoors. You can make all sorts of stuff up, but you can't go swimming. And you can't touch those things that are important to us. And you can't walk the same trails that people walked 15,000 years ago. You just can't do it with artificial intelligence. You got to be a part of it. And if you touch it, it's real and it's part of us. And we had a wonderful... And Joel Pace, or Pache, they call him,
mm-hmm.
he just brought these kids along, and pretty soon they were thinking about something other than artificial intelligence.
Yeah. Well, I feel like it's infiltrated like every little part of our culture. Like whether it's creative writing or even art or I don't know what you do for work with like numbers and statistics or different things like that. But I think the sentiment that like, if it comes to creative writing, well, the whole point of being a creative writer is to like have those thoughts come from you or experiences and things like that. And especially when it comes to like the outdoors, like you have to be able to experience that stuff firsthand and write from like the way it made you feel or things like that, the personality of it.
Right, and we it takes a hold of us. You see, it's
right.
It's all part of us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my books are based on communities, and we just blend in. All of us, we love the same things, we care about the same things, we pass on messages, we tell people. I mean, in the books, I quote all the Leopold. I work with the Leopold Foundation now quite a bit, and you know, you don't know what you can't touch.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty remarkable.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, I don't know. I just love the Northwoods and just what it has to offer. And was, how come the Northwoods or like the fictional city you created, Muskie Falls, how was like your connection to Hayward infused in your writing with that?
Oh boy.
I know it's a big question, but
that's a big question. So the community here has meant a lot to me. And I mean, this is kind of off topic, but not too bad.
That's okay.
In about 2000, my wife and I started and ran an environmental charter school. About 50% of our kids were challenged in some way. And the school districts don't want those kids. They want them out of the way so they can get the regular learners to the table. And I was giving a talk at UW Eau Claire, and I came down from the podium, and I was talking about environmental education and reconnecting kids, I mean, really reconnecting kids to the outdoors and families. And a guy grabbed me by the arm. And he was the district administrator for the Hayward School District, Mike Cox. And he said, I need a school like this in Hayward. I said, what? He says, I need a school like this in Hayward. I said, okay, well, I said, this is the process we've got to go. He says, I don't care about the process. my school district needs a school like this. So Mike Cox and Gene Stahl, who was the finance minister, started a school. And it's the one that Kate runs now.
Yeah, it's still going strong. And
it's going strong. Are you kidding me? Those kids are out with the DNR, Max Walter, Colin Dasso. You know what they're doing? They're tagging muskies with transponders. They're out and they're doing real research.
Mm-hmm.
And so it would, you know, we were able to raise money enough to help fund the project and the kids out there. And all of a sudden, this community has taken hold of this project. It happens on Spider Lake, and everybody's involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's great to see like something that's not as traditional flourish like that, especially in this area, because there's so many kids that I think just benefit from being outside and learning from the environment that they're immersed in.
I couldn't agree more. And you know what the honest truth is that the best thing I ever did, other than have a family, was these schools.
Mm-hmm.
Hayward especially, and have had some absolute incredible successes of students. And I can't hardly stand it sometimes. I'm so smart. I said, what are you doing being so smart?
Yeah. Yeah, one of my baseball players, he just recently graduated from Hayward, but he went majority of the time through Northern Waters and everything. Ty Eaton.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no way.
Yeah, and just like now he's going to be going down to Madison for, I believe, environmental studies or something along those lines. And it's just really cool to see him. I mean, just the leadership I saw through the different projects he was working on or different things like that. I think he took a group to the Boundary Waters.
Absolutely. And so we have a lot of kids from our different schools, including Hayward, that come down to Madison to go to school, and we're able to help them find a way.
Mm-hmm.
It's really funny. One of the girls from Northern Waters, who was absolutely brilliant, she got offered, she wanted, they took the whole class to the Leopold Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And the Leopold guys for the whole day with them, I mean, it was great. And the executive director of the Leopold Foundation said, you know what, Jeff, her name was Parker. Bring Parker up to see me, okay?
Mm.
I said, yeah, okay. I said, Parker, you want to go with me to see this guy? Okay. She goes up there, and Parker sits down. And he says, well, Parker, he says, you know, we looked at what you've done, and Parker had recently given a speech to the Joint Chiefs of Staff and NASA.
Kind of a big deal.
Kind of a big deal. And Buddy, the director of the Leopold Foundation, says, we'd like to offer you a full ride fellowship with the Leopold Foundation.
Oh, my gosh.
And she looks at Buddy and says, well, thank you very much for offering, but I think I'm going to take the one from NASA.
Wow.
I said, that is what Northern Waters and our schools are about.
Yes. Amen. That's awesome. Yeah, that's incredible.
Well, and we have schools, you know, that in urban areas that struggle with just the fundamentals.
Mm-hmm.
Hayward absolutely is a perfect example of community-based education. People show up, and that's what keeps them strong. That's
mm-hmm.
what keeps them going.
Yeah, I think that's what makes, I know, small towns special, but especially towns like Hayward. Just the what I've loved about it, and the reason why I moved back here after college, was just like how you feel a part of something greater than yourself. So whether you're coaching or teaching or volunteering at something, like there's plenty of opportunities to do so and to meet different people that share like a love for the outdoors or different activities in that realm. And I think you don't get that everywhere.
But you You missed one word there.
What?
You're building something bigger than yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You're not just part of it. You're laying the foundation. You are giving these kids opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And with like Northern Waters, they come out and help out at our school forest when we go there.
Of course.
And yeah, the kids just love it. Just being able to not only learn from people, well, other than me, because sometimes they're like, all right, Mr. Essel, I'm starting to tune you out a little bit. So it's nice to learn from kids that are just excited about the outdoors and they're able to take more away from that, I think.
And they'll never forget it.
Right. Yeah, it's pretty special. Well, to talk more about your writing process, do you find it easier to, like, a particular time of day that you write? Do you write in the morning, in the evening? What's your writing process like?
Well, first of all, the worse the weather, the better I write.
Yes, I'm with you on that, 100%. It's just easier to get locked in that way.
Yeah, and I, if I got a chance to be outside, that's where I'm going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And but my writing process is probably just my own. I don't use an outline. I don't do any of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I just write the story. And I've been able to grab a bunch of my former colleagues and brought them in to make sure it's important that our books are true and accurate.
Mm-hmm.
In the sense that when we describe processes or something like that, we're saying the same thing, like a legal process,
mm-hmm.
going through it. And I've attracted an eclectic group of characters, including a former medical examiner, an FBI agent.
Okay.
A guy who was the head of the tactical unit for 21 years, and on it goes. And they get into this whole thing saying, no, that's not what he should have done. He should have done this.
Yeah, but that's all going off. That's a conversation started from your writing and everything.
That's right. Well, and a friend of mine, two close friends of mine, actually, she was the first female captain in Dane County.
Okay.
And her husband was a lieutenant, 21 years in charge of the tactical unit. So I lay these scenarios out to them, and God, they get...
That could get them going, I bet.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, God.
How they'd handle it. And, yeah. But I think readers definitely appreciate the, the fact that it's not like you know what you're talking about. And it's coming from a genuine place, and it's how, like, real life things would be handled rather than, I don't know, if you weren't connected to that law enforcement community, there might be, like, some speculation if there was a lot of distance from that. You know what I mean?
And right. And I just say, you know what, guys, we do everything we can to be correct.
Mm-hmm.
And any mistakes are just mine.
Yeah. But I think as someone that's not as familiar with, like, the law or how our things are handled or things like that, it's
right.
nice to, know that you're reading something from a trusted writer, and like you're able to pick up on stuff along the way as well. Yeah.
It's interesting that I recently read a book that was written. It was well written, but it didn't have a story behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And I encouraged the guy to put a story behind it. This didn't just happen. Something happened before then, before then. Something lit the fuse, and it burned, and it followed. We call it following a thread.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes a lot of difference.
Well, I could definitely see that throughout Figure Eight as well. Like I feel like going back to the hospital and everything like that, and then continuing the story was like a good glimpse that, all right, this happened, and now we're going back to this moment in time, but it's still driving the story forward. It's still pushing it in that regard. But I loved, like, the pacing of your book and everything like that. It didn't feel rushed or anything, but everything like came together how it should.
And you know, we deal with an issue of PTSD in figure eight.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a circumstance that occurs in the book that is very hard to swallow.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, just like what happens.
Right.
You know, I talk to people, they say, well, what about this experience? I said, you don't understand that when you call a law enforcement officer, it's not law enforcement officer. It's somebody's mom, somebody's dad, somebody's cousin, their uncle, whoever. And somebody is calling you for help. They are calling you and depending on you to do something that's going to benefit them. And sometimes it just doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And the law enforcement officer will face that the rest of their life. It never goes away. And so it's important for people to recognize that.
Mm-hmm. And they carry that with them to every new call that they go to.
Everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Every place. And I don't know, you know, I don't know what to say about that, but I felt like it was important.
Mm-hmm.
To be a part of the book.
Yeah. And how many years were you in law enforcement?
14.
14 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I could imagine, like, did you work in a busier city?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I worked in, I started out as a deputy conservation warden.
Okay.
But then I took a job with the Dane County Sheriff's Department. I actually took the exam for the Madison Police Department, Dane County.
Okay.
Was accepted by both, but I went to Dane County, and I was a member of the first precinct. They didn't have precincts then, and when I came, the first precinct, and it was really, you know, it was a good thing. Our precinct commander been around forever.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful guy. And when we first opened the first precinct, he told us all, he said, I want you to go up to that neighborhood and I want you to shake hands with every business owner. I want you to wave for every kid and say hello to them and talk to them. And he gave us our marching orders. And you know what? I didn't realize how wonderful community policing could be. All of a sudden, the kids are glad to see you. They say, hi, Mr. Jeff, how are you?
Yeah.
Fine. And And I ended up as a canine officer.
Okay.
And my dog was really, actually the guy who was the head of the tactical unit had been my partner. And then I got a dog and I got a smarter partner.
I see your shirt is the Surratt County K-9 Foundation.
Yeah.
Do you have a connection with them too now that you're up yes. here full time?
Yes. And we, you know, and, I have a connection with the entire state network.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we got, everything has challenges,
mm-hmm.
but K-9s have changed the way that law enforcement. And it really is something. So, and canine units are underfunded, and they don't hardly eat as much as most law enforcement officers.
Yeah.
And you know, there's some remarkable experiences that I was involved in with my dog. You know, are just hard to imagine, but they're so smart. And my dog loved kids, just loved kids. Didn't like bad guys much, mm-hmm. but loved kids.
Was able to sniff that out.
She was able to figure that out all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And now, you know, you see these guys, and they're taking their dogs out in the public. They're really making certain and that people are not afraid of them. I used to take my dog to schools all the time, and she... I had little kids, so she was just used to getting her tail pulled and her ears pulled. And
yeah. So. Well, and just like in figure eight, like dogs are a good deter. Like if somebody doesn't like dogs and they don't like kids, they're probably not someone that you can trust, right?
Nothing truer will ever be said.
Mm-hmm.
If kids cry when they see a guy or a man or a woman, or a dog growl at them, they're no good. Just steer away from them.
Mm-hmm. It's a good indicator.
My dog used to dislike this particular guy who was running a second dairy auto parts shop, you know, where they park, get the car at night and take everything off of it and sell it.
Mm-hmm.
And she just was sure he was guilty of something. Every time I'd walk by there with the dog on the leash, she'd just look at him
like, something's up here. I'm on to you. So to get back to some of your characters in the story, with the main character, John, was that inspired by, do you feel like that's your voice coming through, or is it somebody that you worked with? Was it inspired by them, or how would you say like the voice of the main character, who's that coming through?
I don't exactly know. The first book, I did an audio book also.
Okay.
Which I would never do again.
Yeah. What was that process like?
It was terrible. It worked out okay, and the audiobook worked out well, but all of a sudden my voice was reading my words.
Mm-hmm.
I never listened to one word of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that a lot of the people in my book were people I knew. I was signing books at Redberry up north here, and all of a sudden a guy walked in stomping his feet and said, "I'm the agent in that book, aren't I?" And I said, no. The agent in that book was a smart investigator. And so we get a lot of people who nominate themselves for different positions.
I bet, yeah. Yeah, that's, well, because there are some, like, I don't know, like you'd say, like, Muskie Falls is inspired by Hayward, right?
It's Muskie Falls.
Yes. Okay, well, I just wanted to confirm.
No, it's Muskie Falls.
Muskie Falls. Okay, it's its own separate thing. So why was Muskie Falls, like, the perfect setting for your book?
It was the perfect setting for community.
Mm-hmm.
And my books are about community. They're about people having a Thanksgiving dinner at the high school gym so everybody has a place to go. They're about working with our schools. All those things.
Mm.
There's great value. And I bring those things to the surface because they're important. Is John Cabrelli me? No, he's not. But he might be a culmination, or not a culmination, but he might be lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
I've gotten some really nice comments over the years from people who have read the book or books.
Yeah. I feel like he's a very like relatable character. Like even if you're not somebody that has worked in law enforcement or anything like that, like there are things that he says that you can definitely hold on to and relate to.
Yeah.
Those you know, certain human qualities that you'd be like, oh, I could hang out with that guy. Kind of deal.
I like him. You know, that's the thing. People ask me, so this John Cabrelli guy, is it you? I said, no, it's really not me, but I like him. He's a friend of mine,
mm-hmm.
and I've got to know him pretty well.
Yeah.
He's a smart guy sometimes.
Yeah. We all have to have our faults, right?
we do have our faults, and we got to embrace those and laugh at them when we can.
Mm-hmm. So you said that, so you wrote this book when like a particular series that you were reading, they didn't release a book that year, and that's what inspired you to sit down and write this. Have you always been a writer though? Like, no.
Well, the only creative writing course I ever took was police report writing.
Okay.
And, but I wrote for some outdoor magazines and some other things, and actually wrote some interesting things, some stories about human interest stories and stories about people.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned a lot. A guy who, Wisconsin Outdoor News called me up and said, "Hey, we've got a guy who sent us a little piece of paper, and he, with his name on it and his phone number, and he said that he wanted us, he said, I just want you to know that I just remembered what it was like when I came home from World War II and was walking through the woods deer hunting and no one was shooting at me. He was 97. So I called him up and I said, hey, can I come and visit you? The editor wanted me to write a story. And he said, yep. He says, but you better hurry because they're measuring time for me in minutes.
Oh, boy.
So I went out to see this guy, and what a remarkable human being. Remarkable. So he was 18 years old in World War II, and there was a unit from Wisconsin that were assigned to clear out the concentration camps. He was one of those young men.
Wow.
And he said they listened for noises of people that would be alive. Their unit got attacked, and he ended up getting wounded and sent to Michigan. And I'll tell you, like he told me, he said, so there I was. He said, laying in a bed in Michigan. All of a sudden, an angel came to me. Now, anybody who's been in any kind of law enforcement or anything else understands that people have these, you know. I said, an angel came to you? Yeah. I said, huh. He goes, and you know what? I said, what? His name was John. I said, what, John? He goes, I got married to her for 63 years. I said, what? I said, you married your nurse? Yeah, he says, she was just as cute as could be. And those are the kind of stories I love to tell.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's passed away now, but he made it to 98.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, just being able to find the peace and being able to go hunting again. I know, like, my grandpa was in World War II, and he was a paratrooper. Mm-hmm. And when he came back, he didn't pick up a gun ever again. Like, he didn't hunt or didn't talk about it or anything like that, my dad said. He was really, like, quiet about it, so he doesn't know too much about it. But I could imagine, like, yeah, just, like, how weird it must have been, but also how calming that must have been, too.
It, you know, everybody deals with things, PTSD, in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the I have heard it said often that if you don't address it, it will address you.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that that's correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's John Gahagan. Man, that guy was a stitch. So I was, when I got to his house, was a settlement farm, been in his family for generations.
Okay.
And he had a 55-gallon drum, an old rusty barrel, sitting up on a hillside. And just for his own entertainment, he'd shoot that drum whenever he felt like it with an old Colt pistol.
Just because.
Just because he wanted to.
Yeah.
He said, you want to take a shot?
Whatever you got to do, right? That's funny. So I also want to get into,
what's something you wish more people knew about nature as we talk about the Northwoods and everything like that? Northern Waters and things of that nature. But what's something you wish more people knew about nature and what it has to offer?
It's as fascinating as any video game. It ties families together. All of a sudden, you're all in a boat fishing. Whether you're catching fish or not doesn't make a bit of difference. Mm-hmm. You're all in a boat fishing. And we need to seize those opportunities. If the foundation of a family is tied to natural resources, I'll tell you a quote. Mm-hmm. At the end of every one of my books, I take a quote from a guy named John Holmes, who has passed on. He was a retired conservation warden.
Okay.
John Holmes said, in one of his quotes, "I never arrested anybody for drug dealing in a duck blind." And the outdoors, we got to embrace it together. It's part of what we do together. Mm-hmm. Can't just send somebody fishing. You got to take them. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think we do so well. I think the northern third of Wisconsin in particular is engaged. The kids are engaged. And so that's what I think. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's easy, like being in 2025, a lot of people might say like, oh, well, the world needs to be faster, faster, faster. We need to be more efficient, more efficient. And it's like, well, no, how about we go a little bit slower on certain things because you need it?
How about it?
Yeah.
How about we just, okay. Hold on 1 second. Just wait. No, he's not the one who's fumbling around. I'm fumbling around here.
You're all good.
So this is, I read a lot and I've learned a lot. In 1946, after World War II, these three guys, leaders in conservation, wrote a book, a pamphlet. And the pamphlet is The History of Wisconsin's White-Tailed Deer. Perfectly normal. These were all conservation leaders, mm-hmm. but that's not what they wrote. They shared some of their ideas about conservation in the text of the book. Mm-hmm. Ernie Swift, who was the first head of conservation in Wisconsin, in this area of Wisconsin, he was well known. He dedicated this story, this book, to those rugged citizens who down through the years had the courage to fight for the preservation of our natural resources. 22 words. Powerful words. But the next guy said, well, I can do better. Jeet O'Rahr. First, teach a child the value of work. Not regimented play. Teach him or her that a sunset over a verdant countryside has more intrinsic value than the most costly painting. Teach him that bread comes from the soil and not from the store.
Wow. That's pretty powerful.
And finally, Leopold. Yeah, Aldo Leopold is one of the guys who wrote this pamphlet.
He got in on it, yeah.
The last line in the pamphlet is this. Democracy is the safest in the hands of a people who love and conserve their out-of-doors.
I agree 100% with that.
Of course.
Yeah.
It's right to our core. Mm-hmm. And that's what we've got to make sure happens.
Yeah. Yeah. I think if we lose sight of that or lose connection with the outdoors in hopes of big buildings or things like that, we lose who we are.
How would you build this lake? We're sitting on Spider Lake in Sawyer County, Wisconsin. How would you build this lake? You wouldn't build this lake. No. 15,000 years ago, people were paddling dugout canoes on this water. It was a trail that went forever. They followed the glaciers. Those things are forever.
Mm-hmm.
And you can walk down and step your foot in Spider Lake, and all of a sudden you're part of those early travelers.
The connection is made that way.
The connection is made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I can't say it enough, but you were truly blessed to live in an area like this.
We are blessed. We are blessed to have a community like this.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. Going back to your writing, what's something that you've learned throughout each of your books that you've written? So like where you started, now completing your fifth book, how have you seen growth as a writer, would you say?
Well, I don't know. I'd have to think about that for a little bit. You know, one of the things that I'm interested in is the idea of words having meaning.
Mm.
And not that I'm compared to Mark Twain, but Mark Twain said that a writer is like an artist. Every swipe of paint is a word.
Mm-hmm.
So if you deal with that, you won't have too many words. And too many words mean too much. It's just got to be, and I have tried very hard to go through my books time and time and time and time again and make sure that I was saying something. I don't need to entertain you with some blather. I want to share with you.
Mm.
And I found that when we do things that way, they work out pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah, and the importance of writing the story first and then going back and taking a look at those different words. But if you worry the whole time that you're writing about, each and every word, then the story's not going to be any good.
It's not going to be any good. It's going to be foolishness.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're going to think, like, I have had the opportunity to think several times, like, well, that's stupid. Who wrote that? That was me.
And what's made, so do you, when you're doing your writing, do you write all, like in a notebook first, or do you type?
Computer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I really have been against computers for a long time, but they actually work.
Yeah. Helps make it, process a little bit easier. Yeah.
You know, and it's interesting, I read some Leopold's hunting journals.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're just a hoot. They're all handwritten, and boy, I tell you what, it's really good.
Mm-hmm. Who are some of your favorite writers out there, or what do you find yourself picking up to read?
Well, my books are different in several ways, but they are mystery books.
Mm-hmm.
But they're a different kind of mystery. They follow a tale, but in the first book, Figure Eight, there is some cussing. There are a few, not many.
Mm-hmm.
None of the other books have a curse word in them anywhere. I'm never going to have a guy swinging down through Main Street by his teeth with a machine gun in each hand shooting up the neighborhood. It's never going to happen. If you want that, don't read my books.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that people like that a lot. I like it a lot. And so I'm very careful about what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm saying, and sometimes, you know, there's things that I approach and facts that I deal with and say, well, you know, John Cabrelli had it this way.
Mm-hmm.
So people have told us the they appreciate the extremes not being in there.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the writers I like Leopold, but I like Robert Rourke. I like Randy Wayne White as a great adventure story. He's a scientist.
Okay.
And I mean, there's all sorts of things like that. Jack London. But I just like good writing.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to enjoy it. And I like to think about things like sled dogs with heavy fur fighting the way in the wintertime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it just doesn't have to be like you were saying, going down, yeah, Main Street with them. Like, that's kind of like, not sure what the word is that I want to use. Like big, dramatic, all that kind of stuff. More of the simplicity found in like the different things, but not as like eye-catching stuff. You know what I mean? You know what I'm trying to say?
I do. Or, okay. I do know what you're saying. And actually, my favorite book of all books responds to what you're saying. It's called Rascal by Sterling North. It was written by a guy and a kid growing up with his pet raccoon. And all of a sudden, you're paddling a river with him and that raccoon and on great adventures and doing wonderful things, joyous things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's a chance, too, to, I don't know, like disconnect from reality for a little bit. There's, I don't know, so much in the world that happens and everything like that, but it's nice to be able to pick up a book and escape from that a little bit, too.
I hope that that's what my books do. I hope that that gives people time to spend. I think that it's hard for everyone. Me, I can only speak for myself, but right now, the violence we're facing in our world has got to go.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to go. It's not about Potter's partisanship. It's not about anything. It's just about got to go.
Mm-hmm.
We can't raise our kids in this world of violence. It just doesn't work, and it's not going to do them any good.
Right.
And we're going to be good families, and we're going to take that time and whatever it is to love our kids. That's what we have to do.
Mm. Yeah, being a dad now, my daughter is going to be 2 in August, and it's like it totally changes your perspective and makes you appreciate small-town life that much more. Just because I think, like, there's a lot that comes with knowing your neighbors and, like, knowing that enough, like, looking out for each other and different things like that, having each other's back and stuff like that. So just not having to worry about, like, taking my daughter to a park or anything like that, and just having the ability to relax a little bit more, knowing that, again, you're in a good community.
And all of a sudden, you've got this precious gift.
Mm-hmm.
And the greatest thing I ever did in my life was have a family.
Mm.
And we've had a wonderful time together. And you will too. 2 years old. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. She's just starting to like babble a lot. Like just we were on a walk yesterday and she's just like singing her version of Wheels on the Bus. Like not like full words yet, but I could kind of get the idea of what she was doing. I could hear beep, beep, beep. I knew that. So, yeah, it's just been fun to, I don't know, this different stage or chapter of life has been really rewarding. Yeah.
Jeez.
But as we kind of wrap up here, do you ever have the hopes that maybe like your books will get turned into like a television show or a movie or anything like that?
You know, they're one of my nephew is a Hollywood guy.
Okay.
I mean, he's the real thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he's Keanu Reeves' stuntman. And he's in all these movies. And, you know, people talk about all sorts of stuff. I've, a friend of mine who is definitely a swing down the main street with a machine gun in each hand sort of guy.
Mm-hmm.
He says, oh, they're going to pick me up. I guess I'll be okay if they don't.
Mm-hmm.
You just never know.
Yeah.
I'll probably be wearing the same shirt, casting the same lure, walking the same trail, no matter what.
Mm-hmm. If you could pick out any actor, whether it was alive or dead, to play John, who would it be?
My nephew.
Yeah, get him some work that way. I like that. Yeah.
John and Nia.
Yeah. That's awesome. Well, before we wrap up here, what can you tell us about your new book, River Gold?
It's a continuation of, it's a new mystery. Each book can be read alone.
Okay, so each book can be like a standalone thing.
They're a standalone book. River Gold, I tell you what. So I wrote about 400,000 words for River Gold. I got involved with this history project, and there's these individuals who, historians,
mm-hmm.
who research things differently than what's gone on in the past. People research a certain battle in the war. But there are other ones, though, that are looking at these individuals. What did so-and-so do in the war? Where were they?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a guy named Kennedy, and I read his stuff about two boys, basically, 12 years old, who entered the Civil War.
Oh,
but it's an amazing way of looking at it. So I started doing some research on stuff, and pretty soon I would buried myself in research. I mean, it was a foot off the table. And so I had to work that book down, and it's really different. I hope people like it. People have told me that they like it.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly people I'm related to, but
that's still something, though.
Yeah, well, you know. So, it's an interesting story.
Yeah, and where can people find your books? So, if they're trying to
any place they sell books, mm-hmm. Amazon, but in Hayward, Hi-Ho Silver has books, and Norsky Nook has the books. And we really support libraries and our independent bookstores.
Okay.
We go out of our way to do that. I was on Muskie Fest Friday. I was sitting in front of Norsky Nook selling books like crazy for Dave.
Mm-hmm.
And we donate to the libraries and large font print mm-hmm. is important to them. And so you can find it anywhere.
Sounds good. Yeah, I think I got to pick up the next book. I mean, even though you said that each of them are standalone, I kind of like to, I don't know. I'll go to number two, which is, let's take a look here. Second book being Spider Lake.
Spider Lake. That is tense.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good to know going into it. Be ready for it.
I just want you to know.
All right.
That people have told me, that's Spider Lake. Oh, my God.
Did a number on him. Well, I can't wait. So, folks, if you're looking to find out more about Jeff Nania, you can check him out on Facebook at Jeff Nania Author or on Instagram at Jeff Nania, and then also on LinkedIn at Feet Wet Writing. Is that's your publishing company?
That's our publishing company, yes.
I like it. Well, awesome. I appreciate you having me out here.
Oh, thank you so much for coming and taking the time.
Yeah, definitely. Great morning for a coffee and conversation, and just love hearing more about your writings and everything like that. And wish you great success with River Gold and Northern Waters and everything that you're doing.
I would like to just ask your listeners to do one thing.
Okay.
Take a kid outdoors. That's it.
You hear that, folks? Make sure you get outside, take a kid outdoors. All right, thanks, Jeff. Appreciate you.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to the latest episode of the Northern Nerd Podcast. Feel free to like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, and subscribe to us on Apple Music and Spotify Music so you know when our latest episode of the Northern Nerd Podcast is coming out. That about does it for us, so continue to be kind to one another, and we'll see you around town.